It's time for Declare Your Independence with Ernest Hancock. To be a part of the show, call 1-800-313-9443.
Believe me when I say we have a difficult time ahead of us. But if we are to be prepared for it, we must first shed our fear of it. I stand here without fear because I remember. I remember that I am here not because of the path that lies before me, but because of the path that lies behind me. I remember that for 100 years we have fought these machines. And after a century of war, I remember that which matters most. We are still here! Let us make them remember. We are not afraid!
Yeah, we're not afraid here on Declare Your Independence. You know why? Because we understand what's coming. You know, are you afraid of a big giant train that's going at 200 miles an hour, barreling at you, staring you down, coming down the hill? There is no stopping the train. So what do? Well, you just know to step off the tracks. Get off the track. Do you even know where the track is? Do you understand where you're standing in relation to the train that's barreling down and will destroy everything in its path? Sometimes all you got to know is which way to step. Three steps. One, two, three. Okay, I'm good. Boom. Well, that was entertaining as it went whizzing by. Wow. Really sucks for all those people that, you know, hey, get off the track. You know, you're on the track. There's a track. It's kind of, no, not you. Well, you know, hey, man, I did my bit. That's all I'm doing. I'm just saying, get off the track. And there's a little, you know, side things. They'll slow it down a little bit just to, you know, change tracks. We're going to go on this track. Heck, the train will split into, you know, five different trains and go, you know, cover more air and go mow over everybody. You know, there's always tracks. Get off the tracks. One of the other guys that kind of explaining, you know, get off the track is Boston Tea Party. Now, his real name is Ken Royce. And he used to be more clandestine about his name than he is now. And Ken Royce was, he wrote a lot of controversial books in the 90s. Enough that the man did not like it one bit. No, sir. They did not like him writing these books. And he wrote them for Javelin Press. Now, Javelin Press is a the publication arm of the books that he's done. And here, let me pull them up here. He did one that was really interesting lately called Moulin Le Bay. Moulin Le Bay is the cry that the Spartans did in, you ever see 300? You know, the Spartans, the 300 Spartans that held off the whole, you know, Persian army, Xerxes, and all this other stuff. Well, the legend is, the story, is that they... there was a bottleneck in the Valley of Thermopylae, I think it's called. And what it was is it got down to where only you could send in, no matter how many, you got to have a gazillion man army, but you can only get, you know, a front of a few people, maybe 10, 20, 30 people or whatever across this front to go through this pass. So the 300 Spartans knew this and they're like, hey, you know, guess what? They're going to meet us there. And I don't care how many they got, that's just more for us to kill. Because they just keep coming, we just keep killing. We're just piling up the bodies. Well, that's what they did. And they go, look, we're gonna win. I mean, I got enough, we're gonna take you out eventually. You know, just lay down your swords and we'll make you kings and do this and that and be all buddies and worship me and everything be all good. And they go, Moulin Le Bay, which means come and take them, you know, the swords. If you can. Well, it's all about making Wyoming the free state. And before that, he had a lot of other books. And the one I want to tell you about when we come back is The Hologram of Liberty. It had a big impact on a lot of people. Now, he's a great addition to the summit. We'll talk more about Boston Tea Party when we come back in just a little bit.
It's time to declare your independence with Ernest Hancock. To be a part of the show, call 1-800-313-9443. And now, live from the studios of Freedom's Phoenix, Ernest Hancock.
Welcome back to Declare Your Independence with me, Ernest Hancock. And, you know, Boston Tea Party, I want to make sure that you understand the history that comes behind him. I mean, a lot of his books are, you know, you got to get them on eBay because they, you know, just out of print, but they're still so popular that they keep going up. He's going to have to print some more because they keep going up in value. You go on eBay and they're like $30 for a book that costs, you know, $7. I'm going, okay. And he did things like, you know, different titles like You and the Police, One Nation Under Surveillance. That was one of his more recent ones. Yeah, that was interesting. And he did one that was interesting. I'm good friends with Boston, and he came back from Africa and gave me one of his new books here recently, Safari Dreams. You know, he's a hunter. I mean, he really knows firearms, and he went and spent a year doing Great White Hunter thing, and I think he was a guide in Africa, just to clear his mind of this stuff. Well, one of the books that he wrote was called Boston's Gun Bible. And this was, you know, all the guns. I want to get something for something. What do I get? Well, this was these, you know, along with some of the thoughts that went into that book. That was one of those BATF gun show. I see you have Boston's Gun Bible on your table. Are you sure you want to do that kind of stuff? And no sooner than the government's wanting to ban you, than you become the man. Now, I remember Unintended Consequences by John Ross in 94 came out with that book, and that was a very interesting book, and they did not want people reading that. All the more reason people want to read it. You know, it's just the way they are. Yeah, you pay them. Here's your 20 for doing that. Well, the one that I wanted to talk about that's of interest to me now is called The Hologram of Liberty, and it was the history of the United States Constitution. You know, why was it secret? Who did it? Why did states leave when they convened and go, we see what you're doing. This is not what you said it was. I thought we were just going to do a little weights and measures kind of common, you know, ruler that we're going to have for the Articles of Confederation. You're changing. You want to do, you know, the central bank, Hamilton, you scumbag. You know, Delaware, Rhode Island, you guys, we're gone. We're out of here. A lot of people don't know. I mean, there weren't participants in the Constitution. I think Rhode Island didn't participate. You know, then when they get done this thing, they spring it on the colonies. You got Patrick Henry, governor of Virginia at the time, speaking for 4 hours to the state legislature. Don't ratify this piece of crap. Then you got Federalists versus Anti-Federalists, but the money was behind it. The bankers, central bankers from Europe and some, they wanted to get this thing done. Why? They wanted a central taxing authority. The United States was a bunch of colonies and states and individuals that are out there that didn't have a single handle they could use to round them up. You know, they didn't have a plantation for them to be, you know, servants. They didn't have a common taxing authority. What do you got in the Constitution? You read that thing without the Bill of Rights, man, you're in trouble. And all the Bill of Rights did is just get it passed. And then they ignore that Bill of Rights thing. Why? Because they got a judiciary that can. They get to determine it. Got the power of eminent domain. We can take your land. Because we want to. We want to build a Walmart. Private interest. Doing it now. Kelo decision. Here. Oh, who said that was okay? Supreme Court! Then you have the power of commerce. We can regulate commerce. Regulate commerce. Commerce. I mean, if I was king, that's the first thing I'd want to be able to do. I want to rule you. Guess what? Any money you make, anything you trade, anything you sell, anything you buy, I get control of that. Are you kidding me? And that's freedom? Then you have the power, some of the other goodies in there. We got taxation. You know, we got to be able to tax, you know, fund all these wars. Even Art Hamilton said that. You know, the power to tax. He's like, how do you fund an ongoing war if you don't have the power to tax the people? Well, heck, that was an argument for not doing it. So you got taxation, eminent domain, regulation. What's the first thing they did? You know, I think it was in the first term of Washington. All of a sudden, the Pennsylvania farmers and so on, they were getting their whiskey tax, and they went, what? Didn't we just have a revolution against this kind of stuff? Excuse me. And then all of a sudden, Washington, what does he do? He raises, I think it was like 12, 15,000 man army to go quell the whiskey rebellion in Pennsylvania that were rebelling against George Washington for the same reasons they went against King George. Do you ever even hear about this stuff in the public school system? Heck no. He's chopping down cherry trees. I can't tell a lie. I violated the principles of the revolution. Yeah. Hologram of Liberty. Great book. Great perspective from someone like Boston Tea Party. That's first speaker on Sunday. Then we have Adam Kokesh. Adam Kokesh is a young Marine that he's probably in his late 20s now. And he went to Iraq, served his country, wanted to do good. We are going to rebuild. We're gonna take I love people, you know, so much that I'm and the boy's got skills. I mean, he's very intelligent. He's very attractive. He's very fit. I mean, the guy bench pressing 300 plus pounds, one of those guys. And, you know, he went over and he decided to be in community service to where he'd go, be on the front lines, go out with the front soldiers, you know, interacting with the populace. And he's the good Marine that's there to help them. How do we get your water? How do we get your power? And learns Arabic. On his own, you know, he's like, you know, it's part of my job. Y'all learn Arabic. Going, he's going, oh, this is so not what they told us. We're not here to help these people. We're here to occupy and enslave them. We're not here to free them. We're here to control them. I mean, it became obvious to him what was going on. Comes back, you know, has to deal with just, you know, comprehending what's going on. Goes to school, you know, tries to get, you know, he just starts getting involved in the anti-war movement. Joins Iraq Veterans Against the War. So this is you know, a passionate thing with him. He was asked to be one of the speakers by the organizers of the Revolution March. It was the summer, July 12th, the summer of 08, right at the peak of all the presidential election stuff. Ron Paul had already pulled out by then out of the race, but it was still, the revolution was still going. So they had this big march in Washington, and he said, yeah, let's go to Washington. Oh, probably 15, 16,000 people went. I was one of the MCs along with Gary Franchi from Restore the Republic there. And we're up there, you know, doing introducing and so on all day, and it was hot. And one of the last speakers was Adam Kokesh. It was important that the Iraq veterans get to speak, but they were running late because Michael Scherer, one of the CIA guys, man, he went really long. So what happened was it pushed into Dr. Paul's time at the end, and he had a plane to catch, and he didn't want to deal with it, and, you know, gosh darn it, and you said, and we're, and I'm like, hey, man, not my problem. These guys go, whatever, we'll work it out. What happened was Chuck Baldwin was kind enough to cut his speech short in exchange for time up on stage with Dr. Paul, get the pictures, that kind of stuff. He did a good job, gave a little bit of time so that we could get Adam in there and kind of just put him up on stage, go. Because I had read his speech a couple of days before when we were there putting up signs promoting the event there in Washington, D.C. So we're going on all the subways, putting signs up on the, you know, byway overpasses. We're just being all kinds of crazy. You know, that I don't know how long it's been since they've seen that kind of just activism putting up, because, I mean, you know, the man's on every corner. I mean, literally. So we just did it, you know, because we always do. We just do it. So we put all that. Everybody knew there was a revolution march coming that weekend. I mean, under all the doors of all the hotel rooms in all of the hotels in Washington, D.C., you know, that kind of thing. So what happened was Adam was out one of the evening, like Wednesday night before that Saturday summit, with my wife, Donna, putting up these signs. Well, he read her the speech. She told me, she said, Ernie, you got to listen to the speech. I knew that he had to give this thing. So we did whatever we could to give him. He gave that speech. It's on YouTube, Adam Kokesh Revolution March. You do a YouTube on that, Adam Kokesh, K-O-K-E-S-H, Revolution March speech. Boom. It brought tears to the eyes. People were screaming, this was a great speech. And that launched him. And I go, look, man, might as well just start calling you congressman because you're going to get drafted. Sure enough, he's running for Congress in Santa Fe, the third district there in New Mexico, northern part of New Mexico. So he's coming to speak because he represents this revolution. these young people, the kids, the young adults that are just, it's their time. And I'm telling you, they're expected to pay for this debt. They're the ones that are expected to be the slaves in the fields. Start picking that cotton, boy. You know, get out there and get going, because we'd be needing your back. Get humping. I don't know if they're going to be able to do that. These guys understand. They got their, you know, Obama youth thing, you know, going on and so on. But, yeah, going up against the truth. You know, the revolution. We know the truth. How do you unlearn the truth? How do you unlearn the truth? How do you get these people to all of a sudden be able to just put them back into a false sense of something? He gave a speech at the End of Fed thing in Houston, too. You look that up, you'll see what a great job he did there. Yeah, we got more speakers on Sunday, too. You come back, I'll tell you about them. You know you want to be here.
There are those that just want to be left alone, and those that just won't leave them alone. Which one are you? The Ernest Hancock Show.
Gotta fight the powers that be. Got so many voices. Sit on the scene. Giving up all around me. Bases full of pain.
Welcome back to Declare Your Independence with me, Ernest Hancock, here in Phoenix, Arizona, from the beautiful studios of FreedomsPhoenix.com. Freedoms with an S, Phoenix.com. Now, at this week's Freedom Summit on Sunday, we have the next speaker right before lunch is Bud Burrell. Now, let me tell you a little bit about Bud. Bud Burrell, how I first came acquainted with him was one of our editors, a guy named Mike Duggar, is a good friend of mine. He used to be state chair of the Libertarian Party back in the 90s, and he's a letter carrier in Ahwatukee, which is South Phoenix here, part of Phoenix. And what happened was I don't know where he heard this radio show, but he put the link up on Freedoms Phoenix, and I was in the Baltimore, Washington airport. And we got bumped on a flight and this. I mean, you travel enough. I travel the last couple of years. I hate flying. It sucks. Unless you're going to the Freedom Summit. That's okay. But the thing is that I'm sitting there going over the site and downloading whatever. And all of a sudden, there's this link to this one radio show about him talking about naked short selling. And I'm going, okay, you know, I listened to it. And I listened to it again. And the next day, I listened to it again. Within 24, 36 hours, I listened to the show three times. And because it explained something that, you know, no one was able or willing to talk about at the time, what he was describing was how they were manipulating the stock market and individual stocks, and how the initial public offerings are manipulated in such a way that the ownership of a company, a new company comes in, they put it out to be on the New York Stock Exchange. You got to go with the program. You want to be offered here? Well, the actual stocks get held by somebody. You know, this depository trust thing. They have the actual, because it used to be that you physically had actual stocks that you would take, and little guys on bicycles or whatever go around and trade them and send them. What? Well, that wasn't good enough. Wasn't fast enough. They got to be able to make it an electronic line, a number, to where they can trade it a whole bunch of times, even in a day. So I'm going, okay. So then we saw this happen, you know, with the mortgage securities thing. Remember, they're taking mortgages, they turned them into securities so that they could make a line on an Excel spreadsheet kind of thing, and they could just trade that electronic number without actually ever going and changing ownership at their county recorder and all that kind of stuff. It was just the same kind of version. I could see the pattern of what was coming with the subprime thing, with the mortgage securities, how the banks took and converted all this stuff into just numbers so that they could really didn't have to worry about who really owned it. They just wanted to trade the illusion of ownership because they could do that faster. So I'm going, okay. So he's talking about short selling. And then I finally, over a year, I tried to get hold of him to get him on the radio. Well, finally, I got a message to some webmaster that was friends with another webmaster of a webmaster of something that he wrote on, and finally got the message to him, and he got hold of me. He's an older gentleman, but his mind's sharp. And he was one of the guys that wrote options trading. You know, he's one of the guys that developed this. He was, you know, I think he was Annapolis and or West Point. He was one of the big, I think it was Annapolis. And he got in military and he met some people that had some skills in the stock market and saw he was a smart guy that was doing some kind of financial stuff in with the armed services. And they had him come over into Wall Street and he didn't. You know, so he has early knowledge back in the day. So he was part of the evolution of trading. And I think it was mostly his focus on options. So during the time, him seeing what was going on, him being part of what was going on, he could see what was being done. And he explained it well and in nice, even, clear, easily understandable presentation that you could get a concept. Now, whether you agreed with whether it should be or not, or you know, that's another thing. I have other people going, well, yeah, you should have that and be able to. That's not even the point. The point was that he at least even freaking understood it. So we did some shows. You come to the summit. You know, so I got a space for you. And he lives here in Scottsdale. So I go, yeah, you come on down and explain to people what you know and how you knew and what they're doing and what's probably going to be next. What is next? The end is nigh. What is next? Well, Bud's going to help us with that. Then you get to, I mean, you know, next. Who do we have? Joel Skousen. Now, Joel Skousen, by no means libertarian. Now, he's in a whole nether area. Now, he comes from a Mormon background that is, you know, preparation for and the evil hordes of and the global international banker kind of whatever stuff. He does a world report that is very popular with a lot of people, and some people that I respect a great deal asked that I research him and see if we could get him to come to the summit. Well, he agreed. He was very excited about doing it. And the thing is that where I wanted him to come in is his worldview on stuff and everything. You know, libertarians, they have a different view and what should be done, but no, I didn't care about that. But he has done a lot of writing on preparation. How much food do you need? What kind of supplies should you have? What should the land be like? What kind of environment, climate, weather? What altitude? What kind of soil? We have to think about surviving this thing. Just surviving. We don't got to beat them. They're going to beat themselves. They're going to be fighting amongst themselves. They're going to be all kinds of stuff is going on. I don't have to beat them. I just have to survive them. And Joel Skousen is going to help us with that. It's very important. I'll tell you about our last speaker when we come back.
It's time for Declare Your Independence with Ernest Hancock. To be a part of the show, call
1-800-313-9443. Welcome back to Declare Your Independence. Me, Ernest Hancock, here in Phoenix, Arizona, from the beautiful FreedomsPhoenix.com studios. Freedoms with an S, Phoenix.com, where you see all the goodies. And you need to be going to FreedomSummit.com. FreedomSummit.com. Guy called me during the break, you know, where do I go to get the Freedom Summit information? FreedomSummit.com, okay? I mean, dang. Now, what we have as last speaker on Sunday, Stuart Rhodes from Oath Keepers. Now, Stuart Rhodes has got a lot of press on, you know, just how about we have law enforcement and military take an oath to keep their oath? Is that necessary? You know, but I guess so. I mean, if you want to have someone say, hey, man, I'm going to keep my oath. I'm an oath keeper. So that, you know, I tell you what the benefit has been. It's got a lot of attention. I tell you who really is scared. We had Heidi Byrick on for the second time on the show. She is the director of special projects for Southern Poverty Law Center. And she is just, we're worried about this Oath Keeper thing, man. Yeah, we got them in our sights. They're writing about them on our lists and all this kind of stuff. And I'm like, why? They're concerned. And her response is basically, well, if they pass a law, you can do whatever you want as long as they got a law, piece of paper. Oh, man, what's the supreme law here? And this is, it's a sickness. It's a mindset. And what supports this is a willing accomplice media. But for the first time in human history, individual minds are able to communicate with other individual minds directly. I don't know how long they can allow that to keep going, or if they can even stop it. That, humanity marches on. We always find a way to be able to communicate. So I'm concerned that there's going to be a confrontation coming. And I tell you, one of the big things, it always comes down to money. You know, all this blah, 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 blah. It's all about power, money, control. You know, we had Kevin Trudeau on a couple of times. And in the last couple of weeks, we had him on the morning show and then the afternoon show. And we spent a lot of time getting to know each other. And I'm going, what makes me think that you're any different than the guys in British Parliament that when the people are ready to riot in the streets, they come up and say, yes, yes, we need to be for the people. We're for the people. I know I was with the bad guys, but I'm breaking ranks. I'm for the people. And they create a new organization, a new direction, a new ring, a new lever of power, a new train, a different track that they want to put you on. Now, and here it comes. Now I'm going, you're just another train, another track. You're going to mow people down. I mean, are you wondering what makes me think that you're any different? Well, you know, it's a good point. You're very astute. You know, well, let's talk about it. You know? I got to go re-listen to that show because I was, you know, that was a good show. Well, what happens is you have always when the people really get all messed, you know, they're mad. There will be the lamestream media will bring someone up as, here is your savior. They are the one. And whoever they say it is, let me tell you one thing that I know. It ain't them. Okay. Now, who are they pushing now? I mean, they've been pushing since the 08 election cycle. It's the most amazing thing. And based on what? Sarah Palin. I mean, man, have they been beating that drum. So it's like, you know, and who else? I told you, we had where Lou Dobbs said that he left CNN. And all of a sudden, you know, everybody's like, oh, is he going to run for something? Oh, is he going to go for Senate? Is he going to run for president? And the first thing I put, I remember one of the comments I had on the story, the headline we had on Freedom's Phoenix. I go, look, I was surprised he didn't drop out of media and run in 08. And if it wasn't for Ron Paul, I think he would have. Because he came to speak here. And there's, you know, Charles Goyette went on Lou Dobbs' show on a regular basis. Lou Dobbs was on Charles' show on a regular basis. I've talked to Lou. I'm like, yeah, you know, word up, man. And I tell you. His whole thing was he was going to use this patriot, anti-immigration, you know, white Christian America thing to be his base for running for president of the United States. My perspective is this, and I am of the opinion that as the debt that has been created for the next generation that cannot pay this off, it is not mathematically possible. The only way it can be done was an enormously hyperinflated, massively printing of dollars. And that causes all kinds of other problems. So this is either way, you're screwed either way. So the only solution is just I step back. I am not, it's not my debt. That's why we did this campaign beginning of this year. We have itsnotmydebt.com. You go to itsnotmydebt.com and you'll see the billboard campaign that we did with babies. You know, just saying, you know, little barcodes on their butt, scanning them on grocery scanners, you know, like they were just, you know, cattle. You know, we're, you know, dip, zinc, beep, 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 got you numbered. Do you think it's going to be hard to convince this next generation, these young guys, I didn't do it. You know, I got this. What's your justification for this? You're going over other countries and killing people? Young people like me? With young people like me? Oh, the education system. Oh, I had to be in debt for this great, wonderful education system. I go to school. I know it ain't great. Okay. What's the other justification? You know, the roads. So we have, where we're going, there aren't any roads. Because I'm just, you know, we'd be Jetsons by now. I'm telling you, keep your roads. You know, if I want to go somewhere that bad, you know, we'll do it on a state level. We'll do it as a, you know, the Walmart road. You know, we'd be doing blimps. We'd be doing aircraft. And what it's just it doesn't even cross their mind that there's another alternative to this collectivization of in the name of whatever thing that they say is the most favorite part of government. What, the fire department? We're going to enslave the entire generation. You mean I got to give up the roads and the fire department to be free and be debt free, and the future of humanity in this country is going to be preserved? So be whatever we can make it. You know, give me a blank slate. Is that all I got to do? I get rid of the fire department and roads. Done. Done. Let the weeds grow, man. We'll cope. No. It's always fear. Okay. So what do we prepare for? Let me tell you. We always used to have a saying in the 90s. We're just like, we're waiting for the wave. And they're like, what do you mean? You know, there's guys, you know, every election cycle, they'll get up where the water breaks. There's always a break. You know, somebody will ride a little wave, a little issue. And they go, ooh, it's immigration day. Ooh, I'm surfing the curl. You know, a little wave. No. Make it to the beach. Yay, you know, I got elected or not. I got a lot of attention or something. And we're out here dealing with this big whole revolutionary freedom thing. You know, no, there is going to be a big wave that you are not going to be able to stop. This wave is going to be what is we're going to ride. The wave's coming. The wave's building. The swell's up. And we're out in deeper water. And we're riding that sucker in. You know, are we going to crash onto something? Or are we going to what? Do we just, you know, let the wave go and we'll just wade out and then we'll just paddle in on the beach later? And the big mess. We're going, how'd that work out for y'all? You know, we might just do that. Do we need to get elected? You know? Still going? Still voting? Did you say there's a caller yet? Yeah, let's go ahead and go to the caller. I don't have the screen up on this. In Kansas? Got you there?
Doris.
Yeah, go ahead. What's your question?
Well, you know, I just get tired of hearing all this about how the income taxes got to take care of this and got to take care of that and one thing and another. The roads. Well, you know, the reason we're supposed to be paying all this gas tax is supposed to be to take care of the roads. We pay our state tax for our state roads, our county tax for our county roads, and our
you mean you're being lied to?
Well, think.
See, the thing is, that's one thing that
but
we...
everything has a tax. When they bring it in, they have a tax. And we pay the excise tax for gas, and we pay it for such and such, and we pay fees if you got a truck to run on the roads and all this stuff. That's supposed to take care of those roads. Then they don't take care of those roads, and I say, well, we got to pay more income tax because we got to take care of our roads. We get taxes for our fire departments and our schools and one thing and another. Why do we have to pay all that extra tax?
Because they can.
Because they just figure out a way to think, you know, we're really stupid people, and we won't remember that in 1940 that they passed 2-cent state tax to take care of the elderly and the dependent children.
You know,
now they spend it on something else.
I don't think that we are really that dumb. You know, it's just not worth. I bring this up every now and then. I'll do it for you in case you haven't heard it before. I talked about this just last week. I was talking about it. You ever heard of the Laffer curve? You know, if you lower taxes, you get more revenue for the government, kind of thing.
Yeah.
And
I have heard that.
And the Laffer curve is a guy, I can't remember his first name, Art, I think it is, Laffer, and is a Reagan administration deal. He's like, look, if you're looking about making more money for the government, if you would lower the taxes, you'd create more revenue and more economic activity. You'd have more money for the government. Well, the first thing is you got to assume that it's just more money in the revenue income tax that they were really looking for. Wasn't necessarily more revenue, it was more control. It was the ability to regulate and give special favors to and economically and socially engineer the American people. But they were making the point that if you lowered taxes, you get more revenue from that tax because you get increased economic activity in comparison to other countries, that kind of thing. So the argument was sound, but he came last, like 2 years ago, and my senior editor, Freems Phoenix, Pal Gamma, and I went and covered it. And we asked him the question after he gave his presentation at the Goldwater Institute, had a big dinner that we were advertising for, and we went and covered. And it went like this. Mr. Laffer, I'm just wondering, our Constitution, our whole form of government, is about people being freer, you know, individual rights. Us get to keep more of our money. What is it that you're looking to do? You have a little bit of tax on a bunch of things. What? Why would you want to maximize the revenue for the government as opposed to the individual people? You're maximizing as much money as you can extract from the American people. Why? And he goes, so we can spend it. And I'm like, wow, man, if this isn't upside down. And he's supposed to be the hero of the right, saying, and because he wasn't really saying lower taxes. He was increasing the tax revenue. It was just by the way he did it. If you have a lower tax on everything that you breathe in and out for, everything that you do as humans, then we are able to extract more from them without having a detrimental effect on the people loving us. And they use whatever excuses, like you say, fire, roads, schools, all these kind of things that they, you know, we're going to take all, we're going to justify property tax because of schools. We're going to justify more bonds to the cities and everything because of firemen and police. We're going to justify more of, you know, national defense to increase your income tax. I mean, all these things are lies.
Yes, they are.
So, I mean, once you realize there's a difference, and I talked about this too, there's a TED speech given by a guy, and he was talking about the separate, the difference between the promise and reality. At some point, you start to see that the promise of what government promises us and where we really are gets so wide and so far apart that they lose all legitimacy. You can't even say it with a straight face without people laughing at you when you say, oh, no, we need more. A good example here in Arizona, Phoenix Police Department, they're always about to save us from and all this. And we found out that there was a murder spree that went on. And the bottom line was they didn't want to find the killer because they were making more money and increasing budget using this issue and this threat and fear to increase their budget when they could have done the DNA test to find him, and they didn't do it. So we're going, what the heck? You go, oh, we got to have police in case, you know, the big, you know, mass murder. Well, how'd that work out? So as people start to find out that they're just milking us, that we're just slaves on a plantation, all the justification for their existence and everything starts to go away. Well, that's happening, and it's happening really fast. And it's,
well, you know, people should figure this out, because if they keep giving them all this money and they do a worse job about what they're supposed to be doing, why, that's part of our problem. We have short memories. Or maybe it's far enough back that they don't have a memory about it. You know, like,
no,
in the,
well,
30s, you know, a 2-cent tax to take care of the elderly and dependent children. Well, you know, our kids don't know that's the way it started.
Well, you know what my optimism comes from is how much they have to spend and how focused they have to be using media, corporate, bought by the very guys that are using our tax money to make whatever. You have the public education system. You have the propaganda from every level of government, from your local news down to the reporter to national. Enormous, enormous amount of effort and resources go into dumbing us down, to making us where we're not educated. We don't even know what questions to ask, much less seek the answers. So the fact that they have to go to so much trouble to keep us in the dark is a demonstration to me that you know, it's just under the surface of when this is going to explode. And we got a good example in the last couple of years through this Ron Paul revolution thing, because I'm telling you, the issue of the Federal Reserve was never, ever, ever, ever a presidential, national, congressional, local issue that broke through the matrix ever in our history. Now it is the number one issue. These guys, you know, everything is connected to how much they can steal from us. And the fact that this issue is out there. Now, at the Freedom Summit, I know this is going to be a big issue. Dr. Paul, say all the media here are going to want to come down and talk Dr. Paul, because he's got this issue going his way. It doesn't matter. Bernanke came out this weekend in the Wall Street Journal crying. I mean, if you read his article, it was like, what the heck, man? You're done. Here we go. Thanks for the call. We'll be right back here on Declare Your Independence in just a little bit.
to Ernest Hancock.
It's me, Ernest Hancock, here from Phoenix, Arizona, and I've seen trouble. But you know what's on the other side of that? It gets better. You know, seriously, me and my friends, think about it. If you sincerely believe and have been proven right every single day of what the problem is and where it's going, you're more prepared. You're not as afraid. You know, here comes a train down the track. You step off the track. You know, what is it that you're afraid of? I mean, you're just afraid of not being ready in time, maybe. I mean, you got some worry, and all that means is an emotional response to, you know, I need to do something. So then you do it. Well, this is where we're at. We're in a situation to where I'm pretty confidently say, here we go. And here we go. Then what? That's what this summit is about. We've done 7 other summits of just as quality of speakers. You go to our speaker list, and we have all the speakers that we had in previous summits. I think there's a couple of years we skipped. Webmaster missed some. There's some other great speakers in there, too. We'll get that full list up. I've been focusing on this summit. But there has been, from 2001, every year, all these great speakers that were all about what was coming and why. And a lot of times we'd have people, you know, what we're going to have to do to survive it, what we do to prepare ourselves. And last few years, I mean, it's get your money out of the buckets of money that they created because they were going to take it. Get your money out of pensions. Get your money out of 401ks. Get your money out of IRAs. Get your money. These were all socially and economically engineered buckets of money that they could accumulate as much from us as possible so they could take it. And they did. So what would happen if you bought silver back when it was $3 and something, just decade in the 2000s, and gold when it was 300 and something? Would you be that much ahead? Well, at least you'd have the value retained. You'd be feeling a lot better now. Now it's going to keep getting more stupid. Will they manipulate it down? Yeah, maybe. But what do we got now? China takes and starts drilling just to say, make sure, you know, some of their gold bars. What do they find? They find that what they've done is they made tungsten blanks, and they're just an 1/8 inch smaller dimension than what a gold bar is. So that means you put a 1/16 of an inch at the bottom, put the tungsten blank on there, you pour gold around the rest of it, stamp it and everything, boom. You got a gold bar that has a 1/16 of an inch around. So it cost about $50,000 for this bar that would normally be $400,000. So you just made $350,000 profit. The thing that I didn't know is that tungsten is almost the same density as gold. Let me tell you, 19.32 for gold, 19.3 for tungsten. Damn. The only way you can tell, you can't even do a spectrometer because it's 1/16 of an inch of gold around. You can't tell unless you drill millions of bars. I don't know how many, you know, it's tons and tons worth. Wow. It's all coming down. What is going to be the safest place to be? How are you going to survive? You know, that's what this summit is about. It's for ourselves and our friends. Bring the people in that know how to survive it. We don't need to beat the bad guys. They're going to beat themselves. They're going to be eating and feeding on each other. We just need to make sure that we survive them. We'll talk about more tomorrow.